Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Dustin Hawkinsmith. Dustin, hope you enjoyed the great weather over the weekend and are ready to get back into Penn State football.
Yeah, ready to get back to the great indoors, as they say, Jim, and spend a little time with you.
Aw, you say the nicest things, Dusty. Tell you what, we're ready to start a new series, the kind of series that only we can do so well. And this one is the KSN Top 40 Penn State players. Dustin, this group was put together by you, so why don't you explain to our listeners your parameters for setting it up?
Yeah, I don't think it's highly complicated. I just always wanted to be Casey Kasem growing up, and I just wanted to play a top 40 for people. And I really, it just kind of comes down to influential players on Penn State's 2022 season. You can kind of figure out where it's ultimately going to lead. And it was surprising. I didn't really have a number when I started building a list, but, you know, I think it hits home, you know, that there are 40 logical names out there and, you know, you have 22 starters, right? So it kind of hits home how much roster depth means and how important that is, because some of these guys obviously are not going to be starter players, but they are still very important to the fate of the Penn State football team in 2022. And it just made sense to go all the way out to 40. So there we go.
Well, you sent me the entire list. We're going to count them down starting at number 40. So obviously it's going to take us several weeks to get through this. No, I'm not just going to recite all 40. But I will tell you this already, Dustin. I disagree with so many of these, so we are going to have some very good discussions, okay? Just preparing you for that.
I'm good with it. I don't think lists are meant to have unanimous agreement from anybody. And I think it was the last list I did didn't have unanimous agreement either. So, I'm open to it. You know, I think there's guys who are going to be too low. There are guys who are going to be too high. But you know what? This is my list for starters.
And this is your show. You're going to make the list, damn it. Anyway, all right, let's start at the beginning. Let's start with number 40. And you have wide receiver Caden Saunders. Interesting guy. He's a true freshman, not real big. He's 5'11", 166 from Ohio. Very highly regarded commit. And remember, way back when he committed, he was the first commitment, wasn't he, for this class?
I believe so, yeah. Yep.
And we thought very highly of him, but he seemed to get lost with all the other big names that came into this class. And I think that's unfortunate that he's been forgotten. What did you see from Caden Saunders?
Well, I just love his game. And I know he's not the biggest wide receiver. He had drawn comparisons. Well, this is what he said from the Penn State coaching staff to KJ Hamler. And I think that his game more or less is built around the same things. And I know, you know, there's a lot of depth suddenly, pretty young depth at the wide receiver position. So I don't think anything can be taken for granted. I put him here on this list because over Malik Mega, because I think his skill set was it's built to play a role in this offense, built to play early. I think he's going to have his hands full. He's going to have his work cut out for him to kind of crack that group. And but I think he's going to. You know, you look at what Penn State has at wide receiver with Mitchell Tinsley, with Parker Washington, two very good wideouts there. Keandre Lambert-Smith expected to play that number three role really for the third season in a row. I think Saunders brings something different to the table than most of those guys do, and I think Penn State will ultimately want to use that. And that quickness and speed, you know, in what he brings to the table with his footwork. I mean, I just think he's ready to contribute in year one. You know, like I said, Malik Mega, Liam Clifford, Trey Wallace, there are some other names here, but I'm just going out on a limb and saying, you know, towards the middle part of the season, Caden Saunders is going to emerge.
It's an interesting pick, especially when you compare him to Malik Mega. The difference, and I'm a big Caden Saunders fan, but it appears that Malik Mega will get that first shot because he also provides something unique. He's 6'4". That's a different look for Penn State at wide receiver.
Yeah, and I think they'll ultimately be vying for different snaps at different positions on the field. And it seems to me like, Caden Saunders in that slot role will have a little easier path. We saw Malik Mega start to debut and emerge last season. The coaching staff had a lot of good things to say. I don't think it has to be exclusive one or the other. I think both of these guys would have a shot because they're not going to overlap a whole lot, it would seem, in their assignments.
And as you mentioned, a couple other receivers who are in their second year, Clifford, of course, that's Sean Clifford's younger brother, Liam, and Trey Wallace, who made that wonderful catch in the spring game, and he's known for being able to do that, to high point the ball. The play he made seemed like a bit of a special skill, a unique skill. Would you be surprised if it was any one of those other guys, Dustin, who made that leap?
Yeah, and I think that's the exciting thing for Penn State. This position, number 40 on this list, could reasonably go to any number of guys. And I think, with Penn State and the wide receiver position, they've been building to this point for a few years now. And I would include Jaden Dotton, who looked pretty good at the blue-white game too. They've got some interesting young options, and they've got a whole bunch of them. I wouldn't say it's too many options by any means, but they specifically went out, in these last few recruiting classes and added a bunch of interesting young talent. And I think Taylor Stubblefield needs to be mentioned again for the role that he seems to be playing, stabilizing that wide receiver coach position, because that had been a revolving door. That had been not a great situation. And now they're able to score some of these big-time recruits, and they're able to get a guy like Malik Mega, who was under the radar but is a big-time talent. And now the wide receiver spot, boy, I mean, I don't remember being quite as optimistic about the future of this position, at many other points under James Franklin since he got here.
And, this is going to be a common theme in looking at your list, Dustin, for me, is I'm going to question you on, I think there's somebody at that position. It may be the guy that you name, or it may be another guy. So somebody fits there, but who's the one that's going to step up? And for wide receiver, you've made your statement. It's going to be Caden Saunders. Okay, let's move up the list. Let's move up to number 39 in this week's Top 40. Cornerback Johnny Dixon. He's 6 foot, 186, transfer from South Carolina. I think he's a guy that has kind of gotten forgotten in this whole mix, Dusty.
A little bit. He transferred last year, and we saw him in 12 games last season. You look at what they've got at cornerback, and I think the emergence of Kalen King, both of those guys arrived around the same time. Kalen King's emergence buries Johnny Dixon just a little bit. And I think with Kalen King projected to be a starter opposite Joey Porter Jr., who's getting all this 2023 NFL draft love, Daquan Hardy, we know what he's all about, what role he's going to play. Johnny Dixon, he's a cornerback that likely won't be on the field if they're in their base defense to start games. But we also know that they rotate pretty liberally at a bunch of these spots, and that Johnny Dixon will be on the field for key snaps all throughout the 2022 season. I think he has been forgotten about a little bit, and maybe the position on my list makes him forgotten about a little bit more too. But I feel like he's not going to be a starter this year, but his arrival last season and the fact that he's still just a junior and can maybe last beyond, let's say, Joey Porter Jr. leaving early for the draft. He helped bring such stability to this position, because if they didn't have him, you would have some questions right now about, okay, who else is really going to play a key role? Johnny Dixon has brought stability for the past calendar year, and it's only going to continue, because if you look at 2023, if Joey Porter Jr. moves on, they're going to be in the market for another starting cornerback, and Johnny Dixon probably will be that guy if all things keep going the way that they are. So I think, you know, the fact that he arrived, he's one of those sneaky gems from the transfer portal. We all talked about Arnold Ebiketie and Derek Tangelo, but Johnny Dixon played quality snaps last year. He'll play more quality snaps this year and probably even more than that next year as long as he hangs around.
I thought Johnny Dixon was a senior. I didn't really check, but I'm trying to grab my roster here. He's listed
on the roster as a junior. The roster has gone through some weird changes with the COVID year and all that stuff. And some guys, you know, they've got him listed as a true junior right now. Maybe he's just got two seasons of eligibility left. But they've really kind of gone back and forth on how they're treating eligibility on the roster.
Well, that's, you know, the roster that I have lists him as a senior. But like you said, with the COVID year that everyone gets the extra year, it's so hard to tell. But it also, I'll bring up one more name for you. Again, it's this someone in that position I think deserves the rank of 39th. My question is it Johnny Dixon or might it be Marquise Wilson? Do they now have enough wide receivers that experiment of having Wilson play both ways is over? And remember, that's a guy who played significant time a couple years ago. So, you know, might it be Johnny Dixon? Might it also be Marquise Wilson?
Well, he's going to be, I'm pretty sure that experiment's going to be over. And I'm curious to see what was last year when it comes to the viewpoint of Marquise Wilson from the Penn State coaching staff. Is he a man with two positions? Is he a man with no positions? How do they view him as a cornerback? Did they have such depth last year that they wanted to try to maximize his talent and getting more reps however they came? I think it's kind of the last thing. But when he's on the field, I feel like he's got some of the better ball skills of this group. So I think he's gonna pay some dividends. I also think, you know, Cam Miller's got a shot, the true freshman of playing early in his career. So I think there are definitely some contenders to play a lot of these quality snaps, but Johnny Dixon rises to the top of the heap for me.
And it's interesting, again, as we talked about wide receivers with, you know, number 40 ranking, there's so many guys there, so much quantity and quality that I think Wilson's better chance to get on the field is on defense. It'll be interesting to see if they do have him focus on that position and if he will show up or not. Again, it's not me saying I think you're wrong with your pick. It's just, well, is it this guy or that guy who's going to fill that role? All right, Dusty, that's it for quarter number one. Stick around. We'll keep our countdown going in quarter number two.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
What defines the special spirit of Penn State? Why Penn State, by author Greg Woodman, looks to Happy Valley in the 1980s for answers. Featuring rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews with Coach Paterno, this beautiful 256-page full-color hardback edition explores the why behind We Are. It's chicken soup for the Nittany Lion's soul and makes the perfect gift for any Penn Stater in your life, including you. Order today at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. Whether it's workstation, server and network installation, problem solving and maintenance, security assessments, or general evaluations, we are your complete IT partner. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or call us at 814-206-0000. It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante along with Dustin Hawkinsmith. Dustin, in the first segment, we began our new series on the KSN Top 40. So we're doing the top 40 countdown. I wasn't sure if you were old enough to remember Casey Kasem in the top 40. I thought that was before your time.
No, I was a pretty young kid, but I definitely listened to it back in the day. I don't know what his last year was on the air, but I feel like late 80s he was still on the air, and that's when I would have been listening to it.
Well, on satellite radio, I listen. They replay his 70s. Stuff from the 70s, so it's on the 70s station, so I figured that was his time frame, but you're probably right, he probably made his way through the 80s. Anyway, here's our countdown for the 2020s, or specifically the 2022 season. We had at number 40 wide receiver Caden Saunders, at 39 was cornerback Johnny Dixon, at number 38 defensive end Damian Robinson. Really interesting guy here, Dusty. He was a five-star recruit out of high school from Maryland. Penn State did recruit him heavily. Again, being from Maryland, that's prime turf for Penn State. He did play as a true freshman at Maryland. They used him a little bit differently than it seems like how Penn State has him planned. But he definitely has 3 years of eligibility left. Very, very interesting transfer portal guy, is he not?
He is. I mean, he's got a lot of the tools that you want in an edge rusher, and maybe part of the reason that he was back in the market was that he didn't like how he was being used at Maryland. So he is officially on campus. I think it was on Saturday he tweeted out that he was home. So he's there, and obviously, some of these transfer guys going to get a little bit of a late start in terms of their arrival, but the fact that he's played at this level before helps a lot. I think you look at this defensive end situation at Penn State, and it's a nervous one for me. You think about needing Adisa Isaac to be healthy for a full season, needing Nick Tarburton, who prior to last season had big-time health issues, needing both of those guys to be healthy and really strongholds to this rotation. That is a nervous situation. And, I think obviously Penn State needs multiple guys to cycle in behind them and bring something and maybe even be ready for a full-scale starting job if that's what ends up being needed. Damian Robinson is at the top of that list, near the top of that list, at least for me. I'm not quite sure what to expect from him, in year one after his arrival. But the fact that he played at Maryland and, it might be a little bit of a transition to a new defense and a new position at this level. There could be a little bit of acclimation time that he needs, but he's a really talented kid. Looking back in the 2021 cycle, 24/7 Sports had him as the number 22 player in the country, the number 2 edge rusher, and had him as a 5-star. Those are the site rankings. So, he's got that twitch and athleticism, that long frame that you want in a defensive end. I would not project him to match what Arnold Ebiketie did last season in his arrival, because he did that at the tail end of his career. He was ready for that moment. But I think Damian Robinson will maybe start a little slow and bring something to the table that Penn State really, really needs in that defensive end rotation. I think you've got a few guys on this list who Penn State needs one of these guys at least to be a reliable pass rusher who can stay healthy, who can round out that rotation, because I'm just not sure how exactly that thing's going to take shape as the season goes on. And you need a lot of good things to go your way if you're going to be really competitive in that department.
James Franklin, it was no secret that he was looking to add at that position, that he was looking for somebody to rush the quarterback. It's no secret that the new defensive coordinator likes to put pressure on the quarterback. You know, when he answered the question about pass coverage, he said the best pass coverage is a good pass rush. And that was Manny Diaz, what he had to say. Do you get the feeling that I understand why you have Damian Robinson at number 38, but with his pedigree, there aren't many guys who come out of high school as five-star guys. With his pedigree, at the end of the year, if you redo this ranking, he might be one of those guys who shoots straight up. You put a star next to his 38 because he could be a quick riser.
Yeah, I think if there was a little bit more clarity on my end about how ready he was, how ready he is to play this position and play it at a high level and be an impact player, you know, if that was a little bit more clear on my front, or if I knew a little bit more about his reasoning for leaving Maryland after 1 year, there are a lot of reasons that you could make the case that he should be higher. But if he is as good as advertised, in year one, I'd be stunned if he were the 38th most impactful guy on this roster. I think this was just a little bit of pause on my end and saying I need to wait and see a little bit about who this kid really is and if he's built to be an impact edge rusher immediately and things like that. So I think he's going to play a key role. I have him as a depth player right now, you know, the second wave of that defensive end rotation. But if he, you know, if he makes good on all that physical talent, he could have a really nice year and a really nice career at Penn State. I just am not quite certain right now what that's going to look like immediately.
Again, there's a route, there's a path for him to get on the field early and make a difference on this team by playing that position. All right, Dusty, next up, and we talk about this a lot. We talk about players who we individually are just, well, we have our man crushes, okay? We have the players, they're not necessarily the superstars, but they are the players that we just gravitate to. Years ago, Saeed Blacknall, I famously had a crush on. I thought the world of him. This is one of my guys. Tight end Tyler Warren. He's 6'6", 252. I just think there's some special skills there. Now, this is a guy who played quarterback in high school, so he's still learning this position. And occasionally I just get carried away when I see an individual play by a guy, and he made a play in the bowl game that I just wasn't sure the other tight ends would be able to make. I like Tyler Warren. I think he's going to have a bigger role this year.
I think his role gets bigger. I also feel like the complexion of that tight end depth chart should probably evolve a little bit. And how that ultimately looks, I'm not quite sure yet, but you know, no disrespect to Brenton Strange, but I think Theo Johnson and Tyler Warren both kind of command a little bit more because they're both pretty unique athletes. They're both unique in their own ways, but Brenton Strange is a really solid guy. He's probably the best blocker out of that group. He's the most seasoned of that group, but they've got some things to mix and match here, and they've got some, you know, two or three tight end packages that they use. To have all three of these guys back for a second year in a row, and clearly, you know, Tyler Warren has been far from an afterthought with his Penn State coaching staff. They made sure that he had a quality role last year because they see the unique assets that he has as an athlete. And to your point, you know, the kind of plays that he can make. More famously to people who might not have been looking at the number three tight end too much last year was the Wildcat quarterback on all that package that was overused. I think we'll still see that a couple times this year, but I do think he's going to be unleashed a little bit more as both a blocker and a receiver because he can do some really unique things. And he's another guy, you know, if his role were to grow, or if for some reason or another, let's say Brenton Strange or Theo Johnson would get injured, you've got a built-in, you know, guy who can emerge and play a bigger role whenever you need him to. I really like Tyler Warren also, and I think he just commands something bigger than what he had last year. And I think we'll see that unfold. I just don't know. Is it at someone's expense? Do they use the tight end more? Is that going to be a bigger part of Mike Yurcich's offense? They've got a really unique situation here with three really starter caliber guys. How do you go about maximizing that? And, you know, the answer to that question is going to include Tyler Warren as your number three tight end for now.
And our colleague Ross Tucker, when he was asked a question and asked Ross about if he were to get a phone call from Mike Yurcich and advice on what he would do with the offense, what would he say? And one of the things that he brought up was more two tight end sets, having at least two tight ends on the field, which of course would mean more work for Tyler Warren. He would get out there more often. And again, the fact that he was a quarterback in high school, those double passes where you don't even have to put him in as at quarterback, but out at tight end, can you still see a double pass? First it goes to him, a backwards pass, and then he throws the ball. Just the threat of doing that, I think, can be important for an offense.
There's always a threat of it. And I think, you know, one thing that you will get from last season is that having Tyler Warren and using him as that wildcat quarterback, it's going to put defenses on red alert when he's on the field. And yeah, if you want to run that same wildcat nonsense, being on red alert isn't helpful to Penn State's offense. But if you're thinking another step or two beyond that and want to give that look and go to something else, or the double pass thing, you can use what is on film against opposing defenses in really unique ways with Tyler Warren, because he can run it, he can throw it. I think he can do the full gamut of route running, and you can use him in the short, medium, deep game down the seam. I mean, I think we've only just begun to see what he's capable of doing. And I think you're going to see, you know, because he's so unique in that regard, you're going to see Penn State use him in some more gadgetry type situations. But I think obviously he's more than that. And he's a player whose role should grow. And I'm really fascinated to see, like, I don't really know, what do tight ends mean to Mike Yurcich? They're going to have to mean something more than maybe they have in the past, because he's blessed with this group that runs three deep, where we're talking about Tyler Warren as the number three guy. You know, they're going to have to make use of that. And maybe he should call Ross Tucker up and get that piece of advice.
Well, I also like the idea, if you put Theo Johnson and Tyler Warren on the field at the same time, you have two players who are 6'6", over 250 pounds. At least one of them has to be set up in a mismatch, right?
Guaranteed. I think both, more often than not, both of them will be in mismatch situations. You know, why wouldn't you want to use that?
Exactly. And if the offense becomes a bit more proficient, we're going to see more offensive plays and have more opportunity. All right, Dustin, that is it for quarter number two. Stay tuned in quarter number three. We get our good friend from statecollege.com, Ben Jones, with us. Stay tuned for that.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
In his book, Why Penn State, author Greg Woodman takes readers on a trip back in time to Happy Valley in the 1980s, a unique era of gridiron success and rapid expansion that gave our university its modern identity. Whether you're traveling down memory lane or discovering old state's past for the first time, this compilation of rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews helps you explore the why behind We Are. Start your journey today. Order online at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results. Located right here in State College, we specialize in providing assistance with many third-party software suites. Our clients include doctor's offices, lawyers, construction companies, and even hairdressers. We provide help with their industry-specific software. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or give us a call at 814-206-0000.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante, and we welcome in our special guest, Ben Jones. You can find all of Ben Jones' great stuff on statecollege.com. Ben covers Penn State football, basketball, hockey. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you here. And by the way, to our listeners who have our app, you can also find all of Ben's stuff on our app now. There's a statecollege.com button. Just click the button. You'll see everything with Ben. As I mentioned, Ben covers football, hockey, basketball. And most recently, Ben, you're now covering golf from Beaver Stadium, right?
Yeah, no, that was a pretty neat experience with Topgolf coming to Beaver Stadium. Had the opportunity to go and try it out myself. I emailed somebody and was like, hey, I want to see what this is all about. I love golf. I love watching golf. I love playing golf. So it was definitely a unique opportunity. It's really the second big thing they've done at Beaver Stadium the last couple of years that wasn't a football game. Obviously, they had done the concert a few years ago as well. So it was neat to check it out. It seems like people were definitely showing up for it. So it was a neat experience, and hopefully it kind of opens the door for more things down the road that Penn State can do with its facilities away from the sporting, you know, events that already happened there.
Well, for us golfers who didn't get the chance to get there, I'm just curious about, like, the logistics of this. It looked like they had you set up high to tee off, and then you have a 100-yard field. I know you're going the length of that. How did they keep balls in the stadium? Just how did this work out?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They were up, I would say, you know, midway up the second level on the, I guess that's the south end zone of Beaver Stadium. I think it worked out to about 140 to 160 yards of actual hitting distance from being that far back. But you're right. I mean, one of the things that they had to take into consideration was the fact that you know, they don't need people bombing their driver through the press box window. I know if I could have, that thing could use a few renovations, and I was welcome to take the first shot at that. But I mean, how they did it is nobody got longer than a 9-iron. There were pitching wedges, sand wedges, and a 9-iron. And if you got a hold of your 9-iron, you could get it down to the other end of the field. So, you know, it was definitely a neat experience from that perspective. I think it's interesting for how big Beaver Stadium is that sometimes you forget that the field is only 100 yards long. So there's a lot more room for people than there is for football. So it was really cool. It was neat to hit it that far. It was pretty windy that day that I got to go out and try it. So there was definitely, you know, you add 50 or 100 feet of elevation from your tee shot, you're going to send it up there in the wind a little bit. But it was definitely a good time. I was out there with Nate Bauer as well, of On3. I think that's where he is these days. All those websites have all eaten each other up at this point. But, you know, he was getting it down the field too. So it was a really neat experience, and definitely it was cool to see a golf ball fly through the stands. And I definitely sent a couple into the stands. So if anybody's lucky enough to find one, it might have been my fault.
A valuable memento. Did you sign the ball before you put it out there? So if we bump into it, I know,
yeah,
I have
exactly.
Something valuable.
Exactly. Collector's edition. You can put that on eBay.
Well, I'll tell you what was interesting in your article, though. You talked about Penn State is talking about using Beaver Stadium in more unique ways. I'm not sure you could get more unique than Topgolf, but you also mentioned another idea or two that they might try out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, you have to remember with things like this is ultimately Penn State's trying to make money. It's about giving people something to do. It's about, doing interesting things. It's, you know, to a certain extent, it's a recruiting tactic. You know, Penn State had a bunch of recruits on campus this weekend for camps and things like that to be able to say, look, cool things are happening in State College. Topgolf certainly counts as one of those. But I do think, you know, you look at the prices. If you're trying to do that, you know, you're in a bay with six other people, or five other people rather, paying $80 to $90 depending on the time of day to do this. You know, you could pay that much a couple times to play, you know, $80 or $90 could get you two or three rounds of golf at the right courses in State College. So certainly, you know, it's an experience. Certainly, you know, they're getting value out of that. But I do think, you know, why not a movie night? Why not turn the concourse into a beer garden in the summer, or do things in the stadium that you can charge a lower price for and get more people in? And I understand, you know, I've covered Penn State men's hockey for a long time, and every year people go, are they going to host the Winter Classic at Beaver Stadium? And, you know, it's very easy to come up with an idea that sounds like a lot of fun. It's a lot harder to figure out ways to actually do it. And there's always obstacles that people don't think of. But I do think that, you know, if you're Penn State, you know, I get it. You want to make the people that have $100 to burn happy, because someday they might burn $100 on a donation or $1,000 on a donation. But I think at the same time, you know, State College and the Center County region, and even beyond that, you know, not everybody has that kind of money to throw at something. So I think if you want to, you know, appeal to everybody, there are a lot of things that you could do that could bring in revenue, you know, that maybe don't have that high price point. You know, you could bring six people into the stadium for a movie night at $15 a pop, and that's one person golfing. So, you know, obviously, you know, there's challenges with each good idea. That's why they're good ideas and why I'm not in charge of actually planning them. But, you know, it's a very cool, you know, I think standing up there, it's one of those things where you go, well, this is clearly very neat. I enjoyed the time that I had, but frankly, I had the opportunity to do it for free. And if I hadn't, I probably wouldn't have spent that money to go and do it. So, you know, I think there's always that balance there between what's appealing and what's going to bring in revenue and what's going to be a smart business decision for Penn State. But at the same time, you know, occasionally finding ways to bring more people in just for the sake of doing it, and maybe doing it at a lower price point.
Well, the golf thing, it's a novelty thing. I'd love to try that once, but I wouldn't do it multiple times again. So, and there's only so many people who are golfers, but I like the idea of the movie night thing. I could picture that on the big screens, either side, you throw out a blanket on the field. I mean, if you had kids, I think the chance to be on the Penn State football field to watch a movie is great. Plus, you had me at beer. Kind of event like that, I think you could get a lot more people in than just the few people, as you said, who were ready to drop $90 to hit a few golf balls. While we've got you, I'd like to hit on a couple more topics with you, Ben. And, you know, especially that you're out there in State College, it gives you a little better perspective on some of these items. Just last week, Penn State came out with their announcement on, well, on the whiteout game. That's the one everyone was looking for. It essentially seemed like it came down to Minnesota at night or Ohio State at noon. They chose night. Where do you fall on this debate? Because I know we'd get our reaction from our listeners, and it was almost split 50-50 each way.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can make an argument either way. I think that the whiteout looks better at night. I think when you have an opportunity to light up Beaver Stadium and just have everybody in there at white, I think, you know, from the blimp on TV, I think it looks more imposing at night. And I do like the idea occasionally of switching up what game gets the whiteout. I mean, every other year it's Michigan or Ohio State, Michigan or Ohio State. I've been to every whiteout now. I've covered every whiteout now, and it's never not cool, but it's always a little bit different when a different team gets to experience that. Ohio State, you know, I think, you know, I give Penn State fans a lot of credit because the stripe out has worked out really well every year. And I think it's one of those things that anytime you try and introduce a new tradition, it can be hard to get people on board, especially when you're telling them what to do and what to wear. But I think every year people have shown up and done their part to make that look really cool. So I think the fact that it seems like Ohio State's going to be a noon game, or at least an early afternoon game where you're not going to have that nighttime atmosphere. If you want to do something different, then, you know, the stripe out, that makes sense. Because frankly, there's not a lot of more interesting home games than those two. And by the time November comes around with Michigan State, everybody's going to be wearing coats and no one's going to pay attention to what their mother tells them to wear in the cold, let alone what Penn State says. So, you know, I definitely get it. I think, you know, Ohio State's the biggest game of the year every year, especially when Penn State's played at home. And Penn State hasn't hosted Ohio State at home in front of fans since before COVID. So It's been a long time coming to get, you know, Ohio State football and Penn State fans all in the same place. But, you know, at the end of the day, when somebody's mad about what happened on third down, nobody's going to remember what they were wearing. They're just going to remember the play call. So I think, you know, I definitely get the argument, but I think the stripe out looks cool. I think Minnesota is a fun opponent, and I think the whiteout always looks better at night.
I think you make a good point when you talk about doing it with a different team. I believe last year's Auburn whiteout was excellent. And again, I realize it's a Southeast Conference opponent, a big name. But it's not like Penn State has had walkovers with Minnesota. They're a pretty good opponent, and you just can't beat doing the whiteout at night. When Ohio State comes to town, fans don't need to have a whiteout to be jacked up for that game, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. That's one of those games as a player or as a fan or as a coach, if you need a reason to get excited, you know, you might be in the wrong line of work, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, I do think it'll be interesting to see what the, you know, these guys have never really been the bunch to talk about revenge or things like that. But some of, you know, Sean Clifford, in the very least, is going to be a guy that's going to look back to that game a couple years ago in the season that Penn State was having and losing on the road at Minnesota, and say, you know, here's an opportunity for us to maybe make a statement and come back and avenge that a little bit. They'll probably never admit it. But, you know, I think that emotional element's there a little bit. It's at night. And like you said, you know, I do think it's fun to have it with different teams and doing it against Minnesota, who's been pretty decent the last couple of years and certainly had Penn State's number last time. You know, that's as good of an opponent as any.
And again, Ohio State fans will be jacked up no matter what. This takes another game and it elevates it. Again, I'm not sure. It's a conference opponent who has beaten you recently. You're going to get an excited crowd with the whiteout. And finally, one last thing I wanted to get your take on, Ben, and that's the name, image, and likeness. It's what everybody's talking about throughout college football. I wanted to get your perspective on where Penn State stands on it. And I'll ask you this right after we got Ryan Day last week talking about he needs $13 million just to keep his team together.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a challenge for Penn State, I think for multiple reasons. I think for one, you know, State College is not a high, you know, there are lots of people with a lot of money in State College, but it's not a city. It's not, it doesn't have the volume of money just around. The businesses aren't as big. The enterprise opportunities aren't quite the same. So I think that, you know, it's a challenge for Penn State. I think Penn State was kind of behind the eight ball early on with the NIL initiatives. So it's sort of playing catch up a little bit. And, you know, James Franklin said on the recruiting trail, they've lost guys. That maybe you have the perfect recruiting pitch, you have the perfect recruiting cycle, but he just gets NIL opportunities somewhere else, and you can't blame a kid. I mean, you know, to a certain extent, it's not all about the money, but if you can get about the same amount of playing time for a similar sort of team and get a little bit more money in the process, you know, I don't think I blame a kid for doing that. So, you know, Penn State's definitely playing catch up. I think we'll see how Patrick Kraft, the new AD, attacks this over the next 6 to 12 months or so, but I do think it's going to be an area where Penn State has to figure out what it's doing. And sooner rather than later, so it doesn't play the, you know, spend the next couple of years catching up.
And it definitely is just plain, it's the reality now. Name, image, and likeness exist. Whether you like it or not, you better be able to compete. That is it for this segment. Ben, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you'll be able to do it again. But that is it for quarter number three. Stick around. We have another special guest in quarter number four.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
What defines the special spirit of Penn State? Why Penn State, by author Greg Woodman, looks to Happy Valley in the 1980s for answers. Featuring rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews with Coach Paterno, this beautiful 256-page full-color hardback edition explores the why behind We Are. It's chicken soup for the Nittany Lion's soul and makes the perfect gift for any Penn Stater in your life, including you. Order today at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. Whether it's workstation, server and network installation, problem solving and maintenance, security assessments, or general evaluations, we are your complete IT partner. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or call us at 814-206-0000. We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. I'm Jim Galante, and we welcome back in our very special guest. Haven't seen him in a while. Nate Wilmot from ForTheBloggy.com. Nate's the one who does all that fantastic statistical analysis. Nate, fantastic to have you back on with us.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here, especially with an introduction like that, right? I mean, geez, I need to call you more often, I think. Yeah.
Well, what it means is not to put any pressure on you, but you better come with your best stuff to live up to it, Nate, okay?
You got it.
All right. Well, Nate, here's why I wanted to talk to you so much this week. This past week, the announcement was made for the whiteout game, and essentially it came down to Minnesota at night or Ohio State at noon. Thank you very much, Fox, for putting your big game on at noon. And I still don't understand why Penn State can't just say, you know what? We want that to be the whiteout game. It's got to be at night. That's just the way it is. But that's a whole nother conversation. But the reason for you bringing you in, Nate, is everyone wants to know, is there really an advantage for Penn State in a whiteout game? And you, my friend, actually dug deep into the statistical analysis for that. And there's so many ways to check this out. The easiest, most basic way is, gee, what's Penn State's record for a whiteout game?
Yeah, so before last year, so it's slightly better because of the Auburn game, but before last year, Penn State was 8-8, 50% in the whiteouts. So that's 50% win percentage in the whiteouts versus 80% win percentage at home, right? So definitely in the whiteouts, they don't win quite at the rate that they do normally in Beaver Stadium. But also you have to take into account so many things there, right? So number one, it's almost always against one of the best teams on their home slate and on their overall slate. Michigan, Alabama, Ohio State are well represented in the whiteout games. So, you know, you take that 50% win percentage with a grain of salt. You know that they're going to come against a very, very tough opponent. And they always do well, right? They very rarely get blown out. So we'll get to it in the later bits. But, you know, if you're a better, the whiteout's an important thing for us, yeah?
Well, if we go into it, as I said, on the surface, if you just look at one loss record, you're not looking at it correctly. As you pointed out, they always play the best team typically on the schedule, like Ohio State or Michigan. So what I like is you dug deeper into this and looked at some of the other statistics to find out if there's any correlation with whiteout and how the team performs. And you did this starting with the defense. How did the defense perform in whiteout games versus other games?
Yep. So, well, we do it again as how many points the defense allowed versus how the scoring of the opponent's offense normally. Every game, all of those 16 games with one exception, which was 2013 Michigan, which was the triple overtime or quadruple overtime game, the Penn State defense holds the opponent's offense to, on average, about 10 points fewer than what they would expect to gain against any other opponent. So, you know, the Penn State defenses are always good, and they are always going to put up a very strong fight against the opponent offenses. And again, when you're playing Michigan, when you're playing Ohio State, when you're playing Alabama, those are high-powered offenses that are very difficult to stop. But the Penn State D always comes to play here.
So the Penn State defense outperforms, makes it appear that the opponent is underperforming offensively compared to the rest of their games during the season.
Yep.
How about if we flip it around and look at Penn State's offense and try to do it the same way? How does Penn State's offense perform against the opponent's defense versus how that unit performs against teams other than Penn State?
So, maybe not surprisingly, but similarly, right? The Penn State offense actually gets held to lower than what they would normally expect in their seasonal average against the opposing defenses. And only five times have they scored more than their season average in the whiteout. So, you know, if just for point of reference, right, if Penn State's averaging 28 points a game in the whiteout, they're always usually going to be slightly below that, except with those five exceptions. The biggest one, 2010, which I believe, the biggest one was 2010, which was the game against, that was a Michigan game, yeah, sorry. And then the 2013 game against Michigan, that big overtime game. And then 2017, also against Michigan, right, which was the kind of the Saquon Trace game that we thought was going to really propel them to the national championship until they went to Columbus a few weeks later.
but there's another way to measure it. Instead of just measuring Penn State's offense against itself normally, you could measure how many points does Penn State score against that opponent versus how that opponent defense did against other teams.
Yep.
So in that way, the Penn State team, how did they do in that capacity?
Right. So in that case, they are far better at outscoring the opponent's averages, or outscoring what the opponent would normally disallow. So only three times have they scored less than what the opponent would disallow, and every other time they outscored it, with the biggest one being that 2017 Michigan game where they scored 23 points more than Michigan was allowing for the season.
You could probably tell from the conversation so far, this could get very confusing in how you analyze these statistics, you know, the old lies, damn lies, and statistics. So you need to dig a little deeper and maybe figure out what are the best ways to measure the effect of a whiteout game and a whiteout crowd. I thought an interesting aspect that you had in here was the number of penalties. And I don't think number of yards is all that relevant, because that's the bigger penalties, the pass interference and so on. But the whiteout atmosphere creates those smaller penalties, the 5-yard, you know, offsides, or they jump, or they take too long. How did those numbers turn out for the whiteout game?
So, very good question. So the opponents are penalized more frequently in the whiteouts than they are in their normal games. And now, again, you know, the whiteouts in away game, you're factoring all their home games as well. But in 9 of 16 whiteouts, the Nittany Lion fans, as much as anything, force more penalties than their opponents would have expected. And on the flip side of that, Penn State is penalized far less. About three, they get about three penalties less per game in the whiteout, give or take, two to three less in the whiteout than they would against their seasonal average. So, you know, it is an advantage, like you're saying. It's maybe not the huge yardage advantage, but it is an advantage for Penn State getting those offsides. And, you know, you go back to the 2019 Michigan game, where immediately after the kickoff, which was a touchback, Michigan gets a penalty, or they had to call timeout because they were going to get a penalty from the crowd noise, right? And that is one of the big factors, I think, in the whiteout that keeps them in the game, even when, you know, they might be overmatched and a big underdog against a team like Ohio State.
Well, in the scenario that you pointed out where Michigan had to call a timeout before they even ran a play, in your statistical analysis of penalties, that won't show up.
Right.
But it is almost
it's
as
a meaningful
good,
thing.
Or perhaps even better than a penalty. And I think what that also does is, and it's hard to measure, how do you measure momentum? The crowd is now crazily into the game, and I think that has to have an effect on the players also from both sides.
Yep, I think so. So, you know, momentum is one of those intangibles that people will say don't exist or doesn't exist, right? But I firmly believe it does. I mean, if you sit in a game where, you know, the crowd starts getting into it and things just snowball against the opponent, there is clearly a momentum impact of that, right? But it goes both ways, too. You know, in the 2019 game against Michigan, when they started to make a comeback, like, you know, Penn State was a little bit tired and kind of let them back into it. And it wasn't just for a drop ball in the end zone that really let Penn State escape with the win there. So it goes both ways. Momentum, when the crowd is juiced up, is absolutely a thing. But you can't prove it, right? It's one of those things.
Very difficult to do so. Let's get, Nate, to what really counts, though. Let's talk about against the spread. Those of us who are known to put a little wager on certain ball games occasionally want to know, what effect does the whiteout have with the spread?
Yep. So let's just start with first, you know, how to show the opponent that is coming into Beaver Stadium to face the whiteout. Penn State has been an underdog or a flatline 11 of the 16 whiteouts previous to last year. So, you know, it is, they're absolutely playing at the top tier team on their schedule. Right. The biggest underdog that they were was in 2016, coincidentally, right? When they beat Ohio State, they were nearly a 20-point dog, 19.5 point dog. Now they have beaten the spread. They've beaten the spread 10 times or nine, I'm sorry, nine times excluding last year, and are 4-2 under James Franklin in whiteouts against the spread. So, you know, they're big underdogs, but they tend to do better than average, right? So if you just, for the last 17 years, bet Penn State against the spread in the whiteout, you're going to be coming out on top in money, right? Where, you know, I don't know what their overall record against the spread is over the last 16 years, but I bet it's, you know, it's not better than that, right?
Although in the year when they went 2-2 through their first four games. Remember the fifth game they beat Minnesota in overtime?
Oh, yeah. I remember.
Won nine games in a row?
Yeah.
They were 9-0 against the spread in that streak.
Yeah. And that's
so
fantastic.
I've heard. Yeah. I've heard if someone kind of got on that train, they did well. Let's talk about, though, even against the spread, how much do you think Vegas is now saying, hey, wait a minute, the whiteout means something. So instead of giving what we always hear, the 3 points to Penn State for the home field, we'll give them 6 or 7 points.
You know, that's actually a very good question, right? Because there are, let's see, we have 1, 2, 3, 4 lines or 4 outcomes that were within 2 points of the line, right? So, that indicates to me that, you know, Vegas is kind of adapting to this a little bit, right? And they are hitting the line nearly spot on in a lot of these games. Now, you do have the outlier, again, like 2016, where Penn State beat the line by 22.5 points. In 2017, they beat the line by 19.5 points. But there are many, many close games in the whiteouts against the spread. So, you know, is Vegas giving them more? Potentially, yeah. And it's warranted, right? I mean, again, they do better. They're 9-7, I believe now 10-7 against the spread in the whiteout. So they've earned a little bit of that right.
They certainly have, and we'll see how it turns out this year against Minnesota. All right, Nate, as always, it goes way too fast when you're here, but that's it for this edition of our show. Thank you all for tuning in. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
In his book, Why Penn State, author Greg Woodman takes readers on a trip back in time to Happy Valley in the 1980s, a unique era of gridiron success and rapid expansion that gave our university its modern identity. Whether you're traveling down memory lane or discovering old state's past for the first time, this compilation of rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews helps you explore the why behind We Are. Start your journey today. Order online at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. We specialize in providing assistance with many third-party software suites. Our clients include doctor's offices, lawyers, construction companies, and even hairdressers. We provide help with their industry-specific software. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or give us a call at 814-206-0000.